community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm delighted to be joined by John Wetton from Asia. Good afternoon, John. Great to see you.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Okay, now we're talking today about Gravitas. It's the 14th Asia album. I counted them up. That's a great output in the 30-odd years when you and the other members have had lots of touring and side projects as well. Yeah. Does the creative process of writing and recording still come easily to you?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, apart from Asia, Jeff and I write for Icon. We have another band called Icon, which is actually now sort of almost been amalgamated into Asia, really. But and I had a solo album. I can't stop writing. The moment an album finishes, I think, oh, that's it. I'm never going to write another tune again, ever. And then just gradually it trickles back bit by bit, and I look at something and think, I'll use that. That's an image I'm going to use. That's an emotion I'm going to use. And before I know it, I've got a stockpile of a bag full of ideas. So, it never stops.
And it seems to be at very regular intervals as well, two or three years.
Well, band albums, since 2006, since we got the original band, it's been every 18 months. That's about the cycle, really. 18 months, 2 years,
Okay. Now, it can be difficult to maintain momentum over so many years, but your last album, which was XXX or 30, it was your most successful one in some years. Did it surprise you to see interest in the band is rekindling and being renewed well into the 21st century?
Pleasantly surprised, because, I've every faith in the quality of the band, and I think that anybody who tries to sort of pigeonhole us, whether it be into progressive music or into pop music or into just classic rock music, is in trouble, really, because we don't really fit into any. I suppose we do fit into classic rock when you play some of our old stuff, but if you play the new stuff, it's kind of, well, it's new.
Yeah.
It's rocky, but it has this kind of Asia quality, which is kind of lush. What it is for me is kind of lush mattress of bombastic melodic chordal stuff going on, and this what's lying on top of it is this very kind of personal heartfelt lyric going on. It's the way it is now is the way it was in 82 when we started off with Heat of the Moment, which is an apology. It's sort of a very personal kind of statement and very un-rock, if I may say so. You know, you don't get too many abject apologies in rock music. It's kind of normally very kind of cocky stuff, you know. So we deal, well, I deal as a singer and lyricist, I deal with very personal issues. Everything is written, well, pretty much all of it is written first person, and it's all from personal experience. It's all autobiographical, but it goes on this sort of lovely mattress of wall of sound, you know. And that's what we did then, is what we do now.
And it seems like that the market, the music tastes are sort of turning full circle and catching up with you again in terms of the people who start liking and enjoying your music.
Yeah, or they've never been away.
Right.
I don't know which. But, we get a lovely cross-section at gigs. We get people who have been with us from the word go, right up until kids who weren't born when we first came out.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm really, really pleased. I wish it could be a few more. But, in fact, this album seems to be turning a corner for us. It's been very, very well received, and that's the shocking bit. That's the bit I can't get used to. It's people saying, "We really love this."
Yeah, don't be shocked. It sounds great. Yeah.
Well, it does sound great. I make records that I would like want to buy, and records that would turn me on. I'm a guy that's always loved music. I always loved the radio. That's what I've brought up on, apart from my very early youth, which was church music. But as soon as I got hold of transistor radio, I was listening to Luxembourg, you know, and I think there's some signposts in my or landmarks in my musical upbringing, one of which was lying in bed one night with a little transistor radio under my ear, and Radio Luxembourg played God Only Knows by the Beach Boys, and I went, wow, okay. Even though it was in mono, I could hear what Brian Wilson was capable of, you know, and I thought, well, if this is what music can do, I want to be a part of it.
This is exactly how my early childhood went as well. One of my earliest memories is lying in bed listening to Radio Luxembourg, which my parents used to put on over night time to help me get to sleep.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Radio Luxembourg has a lot to answer for. I've been there a few times, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. The Villa Lavinia, I think it's called, the chateau.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's no one there. That's me and Kid Jensen one night. We did the programme. We went down to the local boat, you know, the local pub.
Yeah.
The Black Cat, I think it's called. And it was just us.
Oh, right.
It was raving, you know.
Yeah. Radio stations at night can be very lonely places. Trust
Absolutely.
Me, we know all about
they,
it.
Yeah, yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think it's well documented that Asia is one of those British bands who have more success in the USA than in the UK. But one thing I didn't realise is how successful you've been in Japan over the years. And you had 9 top 40 albums there, including Gravitas, of course, which is currently number 26 there. I mean,
you must have gone up to number 11 this week.
Oh, number 11, wow. Yeah. You must love the country.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. No, Japan has been very, very loyal to me and to the band. I mean, when I had a sort of bit of a strange period up until about 10 years ago, the 10 years preceding the last 10 years, I was a bit in the wasteland, I was a bit out of it, I must admit, and they kept me going. That was my mother deal, that was my where I could get a record deal, where I could go on tour and make enough money to keep me going for the year. So I've got a lot of loyalty back to them. They've stuck with me through thick and thin, and they've also, they found a place in their heart for the band as well, and so we do well. We do okay there, you know.
Yeah. It's good to see that it's still solid and strong, the support there.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I mean, we can go to pretty much any country in the world, and we can do about 400 people anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so South America, Europe, anywhere you care to mention, we can go and do that. Mm. But Japan, we can play in slightly larger places. In America, we can play in sometimes, if we're lucky, slightly larger places than that. But
yeah.
This country, to our shame, the first couple of years we could have done a lot more here, and our managers were only really interested in working America at that time.
Boy, did they work America!
Yeah, we did. We tore the arse out of America, basically.
Yeah.
It worked. You know, we were tailor made for the American market, really. But we're now finding the sort of backlash of the. Where we didn't put the homework in to start with.
Yeah.
And that's, as I say, you know, when we came out in 1982, on the great elevator of life, we got off at the penthouse, not the first floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't get a chance to grow organically as a band, to go up and down the M1 15 times a week. You know, we didn't do that. We didn't have the sort of the cozy dressing room chats where the promoter wasn't going to pay us and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We went straight into MTV and arenas and, you know. So what we missed out on then, we're doing now.
Yeah.
So late in the day, here we are, you know, we're going up and down the M1 to Holmfirth and to Malvern, and then before we go to Japan, and we're going to do some more gigs in this country later on this year. We're doing that bonding stuff now.
It must feel great in a way, because you feel like you've clearly got nothing to achieve. You're just there playing to people who like you, and you can grow it however you want to grow it. There's no pressure.
There is no pressure, other than we want to be good. We want to. I mean, I think people know that when they come to an Asia gig, they're going to get a certain standard. It's really whether if they don't come along with a preconceived idea of what we're like, they're going to go away absolutely thrilled. They get a very good 2-hour show from us. You know, it's first-class musicianship, great songs, really well played, and you know, what's not to like about that?
Exactly. Now, the band's former guitarist, Steve Howe, left just over a year ago. You've recruited a new guitarist, talking about boys that weren't around when the band started.
Absolutely. So
you've now got Sam Coulson.
Sam Coulson.
And how's Sam fitting in?
Great. Steve was about to drop the bombshell and say that he was going to leave. Must have been about November 2012. I had 5 days jump on that one, and we had basically to decide whether we were going to continue. When we all sat in the same room, we said, "Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to carry on." if we did that, we had to come up with a pretty good press announcement that day, the day that Steve said he was leaving. So we did all our homework. We did all that. We got the YouTube together. We asked the favourites, the two guys who were the favourites to take over from Steve. One was Steve Lukather. The other one was Paul Gilbert.
Right.
So Steve and I are good friends. I approached him and he said, yeah, you know, I'd love to do it and I'm very flattered, but I can't. So Carl's favourite bloke was Paul Gilbert. We went to him and he said, same thing, I'd love to, very flattered, but I can't, you know. Yeah. So we said, when we got that answer, we said, so if you can't, do you know a man who can? And he said, yes, I do. I know two. One American guy and one British guy. The American guy was absolutely brilliant, a little bit older, a bit closer to our age, a sort of jack of all trades. And there was Sam, who's a completely unknown quantity, young guy, 26 then, but a blank page. You know, it's because he was unknown, he didn't come with any baggage. There was no kind of skeletons in the wardrobe there. And that was good because the last thing we wanted was another train wreck like me, you know. So we wanted someone who was able to go on the road immediately, who could fit into the band on a sort of, he could solo like a demon, but would actually play the structural parts within the band compositions. Yeah. And he just ticked every box. Mm. He's happily married, so he's kind of a steady guy. He's a brilliant player, and he's willing to be part of the band. So, you know, all of those boxes got ticked, and we threw him in the deep end. His second gig was Sweden Rock,
right?
Which is, you know, 150,000 people.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like it.
Come on, Sam, no pressure. Get out there, do it. Kill him, you know.
He clearly passed the test, though.
He did. Yeah. He did. We had one gig the night before in Wavendon Stable, so we played to kind of rabidly partisan crowd of 300, sold out, you know, and everybody there loved it. So we had a bit of a springboard to take us into Sweden Rock, but still not an easy thing to do for him. You know, he's still kind of messing with parts on his head and stuff, and he passed with flying colours. We then did a German tour. We played the Harley Davidson Festival in Austria, a load of gigs in Germany and Switzerland. We ended up in Copenhagen. And I tweeted halfway through that German tour, which was last July, something like that. And I tweeted, I said, if you have any doubts about this band, come and see us in a German club. It'll blow your head off. I mean, we were really hot. We were really, really good. You know, the best, I think, the band's ever been, ever, on stage. So I have every confidence. We took that into the studio with us. We took that enthusiasm. Jeff and I started writing the new album, and we had this kind of template to work from, which was the road band, you know. And it seems to have spilled over into the album, and the energy in there is quite sort of it's quite sort of metally and heavy, heavy and hard edged, and but it's still within our remit, you know. It's not outside the box for us at all. In fact, if you look back to the third album that we made, Astra, it's kind of similar in the way it's constructed to that. But I'm amazed. I mean, just every so often you get a record that clicks and people go, yeah, we like this, and that's what seems to have happened. But my manager just texted me this afternoon and said we had three number ones so far today in various charts. One is the hard rock chart in Italy. One is the download, four number ones over the last 3 days. CD Universe, number one. E-Music Prog Chart, number one. Amazon Italy, number one. Hard Rock and Metal, and Amazon US, number one. That's not bad, you know, for a bunch of old farts and a young kid.
And it's quite diverse. You've got the hard rock and you've got the progressive rock
as
well.
Yeah, we're spreading, you know. So we don't come number one in the old fart chart.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can be pigeonholed into that quite yet.
But no, we'd be hard pushed to push the Rolling Stones off number one on that one.
Yeah, I've got a good 50 years left in them as well. Okay, now obviously we're here to talk about Asia, but I can't forget to mention that you're also playing Cruise to the Edge. Is that end of next week?
It's the end of next week, indeed, with the UK. We don't play Cruise to the Edge as Asia. We all play on it. Now, next week, is this right? I'm getting all my sort of diversification over in one four-day stint, which is I'm going to be doing the UK. UK will be the main band that we'll be there for. But I'm also doing a guest spot with Steve Hackett, and I'm doing a guest spot with Renaissance as well. But once you get on the boat, on the ship rather, it's called a ship, there's so much cross-pollination going on, it's ridiculous. You know, people start meeting and talking, and then people get invited to play on someone else's gig, and because you're all in the same place for 4 days, you know. It makes sense, and they know that's going to happen. So the punters and the organisers know that that's what's going to happen. So they kind of they encourage that, and it's great for the punters because they see something they're never going to see again. They'll see, I don't know, someone from Meridian guesting with Steve Hackett, or they'll see me guesting with Steve Hackett. You're not going to see that again.
Yeah.
You're not going to see that song being guested again. And there's lots of that going on. So it's actually great fun. The cruise. We did it last year.
Yeah.
And I will do it again next year. It's so much fun.
I'm glad to hear you say that you do it next year, because I don't know why I'm not on it this year, looking at the lineup, and I'm thinking, I'm really not quite sure why I didn't book a few days off.
It's spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, if you like that kind of music.
I think I might I might give it a try next year if they do it again. Yeah.
There are lots of other genres going out. There's a metal one, and there's a moody blues one. It's becoming quite the thing to do.
Okay, now, after the cruise, it's back to Asia duties. You've got the short tour of the UK and a few...
Well, we did two days. They're called preview shows.
Right. Will there be more on top of that?
Yes, there will. Okay. Later on in the year. I particularly wanted to do Holmfirth because we cancelled it twice.
Right.
For legitimate reasons, but unfortunately that stigma goes with you. You know, even if you cancel it for the best of reasons, because someone cannot do it because they're ill, that you still carry that round until you make good, until you go and play the gig.
Yeah.
So I said that the last meeting that we had, I said we've got to do that gig. We can't cancel twice and then not play there. So when we went back to Holmfirth and said, okay, we'll do it, the guy said, I don't want you back, you cancelled twice. So after much negotiation, we are playing it.
Third time lucky.
Yeah. We're playing that on my birthday.
Oh, right.
My 12th of June.
Nice.
My 65th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. The night before, we're playing, on the 11th, we're playing in Malvern Theatre. So we're doing two little, you know, Bijou warm-up gigs before we go to... They're actually previews rather than warm-ups. But we're going to Japan. We leave the day after Holmfirth to Japan. We're going to do 4 gigs there. Then we come back, and the next thing we do will be... I think we're doing a European tour and an American tour, possibly with some South American gigs thrown in.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So we'll cover most parts of the globe before Christmas, hopefully.
That's fantastic. Okay, after 3 decades of writing and touring with Jeff and Cole, do you still approach each album and tour with the same enthusiasm and energy?
Yeah, I think you've got to. I think you have to, because... If it was like, oh my God, you know, but, what do they used to call it? Some kind of obligation, contractual obligation.
Yeah.
Right? But if it was that way around, I don't think I could do that. You know, when Steve said he was going to leave in San Francisco at the end of 2012, the first thing that happened after we found a new guitar player, we got a letter from the record company saying, totally behind you, 100%. You know, let's go for it. And that's kind of what we needed. We went out on tour and got great reception at Sweden Rock and at the gigs that we played. That gave us the bounce, the impetus needed to go into the studio. Yeah, I go in with naive enthusiasm every time. Yeah,
and obviously, well, not the naivety, but the enthusiasm clearly shows, and you're there, successful album, successful tour, and then you're back on doing it again.
Absolutely. But if you're in the dressing room, you couldn't help but get caught up in the enthusiasm. It's really good. It's like a football team, you know. There's a very, very good camaraderie, very good morale within the band. It's hard to That wasn't there in the early days, you see.
Right.
It wasn't. In 82, we had separate dressing rooms, separate limos, you know, we wouldn't even travel together. So there was no time for us to be a band.
Wow.
And now we're doing it all the right way.
So, yeah.
You know.
Fantastic. Do you have any other projects planned in the pipeline after this?
No, I don't. I mean, I think there might be a few more gigs with UK somewhere down the line. I don't know exactly when, but no, I don't. Certainly not this year. No, this year's going to be chock-a-block with Asia, really.
Okay. Mm. Finally, I've been telling people this week at the station that I'm interviewing you, and I've had the same reaction with nearly everybody, and there's a little bit of a squint, and Asia, yeah, can you sing one of their songs? And I'll sing Heat of the... And suddenly they'll say, yeah, I got it. They know straight away. Two words. And I mean, how does it feel, 33 years on, how does it feel that you've given such a great song to the ages?
That's great, you know, to have it done on South Park.
Yeah.
That was very cool. My son said, he's 15, you know, he's about, must have been about 8 or 9 at the time. He said, oh, that is so much cooler than The Simpsons.
You must feel like you've made it. Now, don't worry about a Brit Award or anything like that. If you made it on South Park.
Cartman singing your song. Yeah, that is great. Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. John, thank you very much for chatting today.
Thank you, Paul.
Enjoy the cruise and the tour, and I hope the gigs go well for you this year. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.